And call the Mesa City Council meeting of Monday, July 2nd, 2007 to order. We'll begin the meeting with an invocation tonight led by Councilmember Kyle Jones, followed by a Pledge of Allegiance. Councilmember Whalen, would you lead us in the pledge this evening? Would you please stand for the invocation and remain standing for the pledge?
Our Father in heaven, as we meet together this night as a city council and those who have come to address and participate, we are grateful for the opportunity that we have and the governments that we enjoy where there is participation, where we are able to live in this land of freedom. And as we make decisions, we pray for thy guidance. We pray also for those who are serving to preserve our freedom. Watch over and bless them. Again, we are grateful. Pray for our fair city. Pray for the residents of our city. And may we have thy direction tonight in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Would you please join me in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would be the reading of the consent agenda for tonight.
Good evening. All citizens are permitted and encouraged to speak on agenda items. If you're interested in speaking on an agenda item, please fill out a blue card in the back of the room and give it to the city clerk. When the council considers the item, you'll be called to the podium to provide your comments. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda. All items listed with an asterisk will be considered as a group by the city council and will be acted with one motion. There'll be no separate discussion of these items unless a council member or citizen requests, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. If a citizen wants an item removed from the consent agenda, a blue card must be completed and given to the city clerk prior to the council's vote on the consent agenda. Item 2, approval of minutes from previous meetings as written. Item 3A, act on new restaurant license for Red Brick Pizza, 1041 North Dobson Road, Suite D2. Item 4A, act on contract for 85 Colt Law Enforcement Carbine Rifles, $82,049.62. Item 4B, act on contract for one replacement truck with aerial life and utility body, $80,383.78. Item 5A, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-28, 1350 West Main Street for office, retail, and townhouse development. Item 5C, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-60, 2600 South Power Road for residential subdivision. Item 5D, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-63, 1340 North Power Road for office buildings. Item 5E, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-64, 1000 West Grove Avenue for condominiums with retail. Item 5F, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-65, 5600 East Baseline Road for hospital and office buildings. Item 5G, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-67, 11202 East Germain Road for steel mill. Item 5H, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-68, 1803 South Vineyard Road for medical offices. Item 5I, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-69, 9135 East Guadalupe Road for a retail shopping center. Item 5J, introduce ordinance for July 9th, zoning case Z07-70, 4827 East McKellops Road for a four-story hotel and restaurant. Item 5K, introduce ordinance for July 9th, annexation case A06-24, annex land on Sossaman Road north of McDowell Road. Item 6C, act on resolution to purchase equipment for auto theft investigations. Item 6D, act on resolution to purchase equipment and fund overtime for auto theft prevention and education. Item 6E, act on resolution to accept grant funds for $3,000 for training costs. Item 6G has been deleted. Item 6H, act on resolution to authorize use of eminent domain to acquire land of right-of-way for public utilities. Item 7A has been removed from the consent agenda. Item 7B, act on ordinance to amend the Mesa City Code regarding traffic modifications. Item 7C, act on ordinance, zoning case Z07-53, 9107 East Southern Avenue for retail building. Item 9A, act on subdivision plat, Costco Wholesale and Superstition Commerce Park, 1300 South Sossaman Road. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda.
Are there any requests to remove any items that were read in?
No, Mayor, the consent agenda can stand as read.
Okay. Were there any citizens that came this evening to address any of the items that were just read that didn't get a chance to turn in a blue card? Did you have an item that you wanted to address this evening? She has the blue card for you? Okay. All right. Then I'll entertain a motion, and I have one by Councilmember Jones, seconded by Vice Mayor Walters for approval of the consent agenda as read. Would you please vote? The vote is unanimous in favor of the ayes. The first item that was not read into the consent would be on page 3, item 5B. This is a zoning case Z07-59. It's in District 5. That's the 5500 block of East McKellips Road, south side, located east of Higley Road on the south side of McKellips Road. It's approximately 4 acres. Rezoned from OS to R2BIZ DMP and site plan review. The request will allow the development of townhouse community at that location. Comes forward with a recommendation of 4-0 from the Planning and Zoning Board. We have one request to speak on this. And I have also need to call on Councilmember Jones. Why don't I do that first, Mr. Jones?
Yes, because of recent business activity with the owner, I will abstain.
Okay. We usually go through with the applicant, followed by public, then staff. I don't know if the applicant is present this evening on this issue. Would you want to see what the comments are first, and then I can call you up, or would you? All right, why don't we try that? I do have one request by Chris Yedlick. Please, Chris, would you like to come forward? And I apologize, I probably missed your last name there by a couple syllables. All right.
Hello, Mayor. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. The reason why I'm here is I want to first let everybody know that I did send you an email with some documentation on my views on this so that you didn't catch this first from me here at the meeting. Also had the opportunity to speak to Councilmember Griswold for a brief period of time. I want to make it clear that I am not opposed to the rezoning of the property itself. I think the townhouse community is a great idea for that parcel, and I think it'll bring a lot of benefits to the city of Mesa. However, what I am opposed to is the site plan. I currently own unit number 56 in Alta Mesa Park Links, which is right next to McKellips Road, and the exit gate to our community is there. The current site plan says that they want to put an exit gate right behind my unit. When I came to the Planning and Zoning Board meeting, the gentleman who is the applicant went into great detail about how they could potentially do an emergency only gate. When I went back and reviewed the video, it was a little more heavier on that they would do that than I originally thought it was. And when they came back to me with a site plan, all that I saw was that they were moving the gate 5 feet, not making it emergency, only making it exit. And when I addressed him on the telephone about why they were making the decisions that the way they were doing, he gave me the reasons why they were doing what they were doing, all of which were not according to what was said at the P&Z meeting, which was to make it an emergency only gate. I realize people can change their ideas and change their minds on things, but the short story is this is going to have a major negative impact to my property values because I'm going to have 3 high traffic items around my townhouse in this community. The interesting piece of this is that I am the only person that this is going to affect with this townhouse. So what I'm asking for you guys to do is take a look at the site plan and make it some type of stipulation for them to move that gate as far away from my unit as possible or make it an emergency only gate. When Mr. Welker and I did discuss about it, he gave me reasons. All of the reasons are in the benefit of the developer, of which none are to me. And by moving the gate, he did feel like there were some things that would cause issues to their property from a, I would guess, a financial perspective or an aesthetic perspective. But the short story is that gate right behind my unit is only going to affect me, and it will be detrimental to my property values. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Walker? This is for the introduction. We will have some further discussion on this on July 9th. But you want to try to address the issue?
Yes.
Where it is today?
Mayor, council members, apologize for any misperception of my comments in the P&Z meeting. We were caught completely off guard by the Chris showing up to the meeting. We had had 4+ months of very positive interaction with the people living in the area and a lot of different meetings that we held, and so we had no anticipation in coming, and I was scrambling in the meeting to try to think of ideas of what we might be able to consider or do to address his concerns. After we got back to the office and sat down with our architect and the developer and looked at the potential opportunities, the two main themes that we had was, one, could we make this an emergency-only gate, and would that be a problem either to the city of Mesa and their codes or a problem to the function of the development? Number two is, Chris had suggested for us to try to move that gate as far to the east as we could to distance it from his property and get some space between his property. We evaluated both of those to address the emergency exit only. We have a project at another location, a townhome project, where we have an emergency exit only. It has half the number of dwelling units this has, and we feel very strongly after evaluating it that with the number of units in this particular development, that there needs to be a secondary exit only controlled access out of the project. There'll be no entry from McKellips into that gated entry, but there would be, it would be used as a secondary exit only. The other item we took a look at was how far could we move it away without creating either a traffic hazard, because the intersection with Alta Mesa Boulevard isn't that far away, and not create problems with the traffic flow inside of our development. We looked at moving the driveway approximately 100 feet to the east to try to line it up with one of our, for example, pedestrian areas between buildings. The problem for that is it creates quite a bottleneck at that location and conflicts with the individuals who would own those townhomes and be backing out into that drive at the same time people would be trying to exit the property. So after evaluating those two things, the solution we came up with that we felt would address his concerns, alleviate the problem, and also maintain the design we had without damaging it, would be that we would slide the driveway over a minimum of 5 feet. That would allow us to double the number of trees. Instead of a single row of 24-inch box trees, we'd go with a double row of 24-inch box staggered to create a greater buffer between the back of his unit and this unit. Spoke to Chris about it, and he explained our rationale for it. Unfortunately, that was not acceptable to him. And yet, as we explained to him, to try to move it any further onto our project really could create some problems for our project or to create an emergency only. So we feel like we've done a good job of addressing his concerns. We think that'll be a good way of dealing with it. If you had any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Again, this is for introduction. I don't know how far you want to get into questions at this time. I guess I do have only one is the setbacks that you have typically from your property line to the buildings. And I'm looking at one of the diagrams that was submitted in the packet. What do they have on the other side? How far back is Chris and his complex? What is his setback to his wall?
You know, Mayor, I don't know that offhand. I'd have to ask Chris how far it is from his rear property line to the back of his unit. Do you know? From your rear property line to the back of your unit, Chris?
10 feet, maybe.
10 feet.
Okay. And what are you having on yours before the building comes in? What's your setback on that side?
The setback is a 15-foot landscape setback.
Okay. And is a 10-foot a minimum setback when Chris's was built? Is that what we have from staff? Is that side yard?
It was not a minimum at that time, Mayor and Council, but it was a request as far as the PAD overlay in order to increase the lot yield.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Councilmember Griswold?
This is the introduction, so I'm in favor of it, just to see if there's any other problems that will come out on this. This is a exit-only gate. There's no egress or entrance in the
Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, that is correct, at exit only.
That cuts down traffic by 50%. So okay.
Yes, and it's
Thank
a secondary. the primary is over on Alta Mesa.
Okay. I guess my only question to staff is if there's a setback of 10 or 15 foot for a building setback, is there there's no driveway setback? The driveway can be right on the property line? Is that how the code reads? You mentioned that you're giving 5 foot. Was it right on the property line before and now it's 5?
I think there's a little bit of confusion here. The 10 foot is on the west side of the common property line, and that's from the common property line to Mr. Yerkla's house. Okay. There is a setback requirement on this property of 15 feet, which is adhered to with the site plan that's proposed.
Correct.
There's also a requirement to keep that wing off of the common property line by 10 feet. So the alignment of the driveway in its current configuration would meet engineering standards as well as the zoning ordinance requirements. There would not be any changes unless there's a change to the site plan that went through the Planning and Zoning Board, which would be a refinement. We would not suggest it go back to the Planning and Zoning Board, and that was what Mr. Walker was talking about today, which would be to take that driveway and move it even further to the east in order to allow a bit more opportunity for landscaping to buffer the adjoining neighbor's property.
Okay, but my question was still, is there a setback before the driveway cut on a property?
There's an engineering standard of 10 foot before that wing can start.
Okay, and you indicated it was 5 or not?
No, what I indicated is we were moving it an additional 5 feet to the east.
So what is it now?
The actual wing of the driveway would be 15 feet from the property line.
All right, thank you. All right, I have a motion and second for introduction. The motion by Councilmember Griswold, seconded by Councilmember Walters. Any other discussion? Would you please vote? The vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Jones voting nay.
Abstaining.
Oh, I'm sorry, abstaining because of a potential conflict. All right. I saw a different color up there and thought it was red instead of whatever that color is. So my apologies. The next item is on page 6. That would be item 6A. This is taking action on the following resolutions. This is a resolution approving and authorizing the city manager to execute an intergovernmental agreement between the Regional Public Transportation Authority and the City of Mesa for fiscal year 07-08 East Valley Dial-A-Ride Services. I have a motion by Councilmember Summers, seconded by Councilmember Walters. Any discussion? Would you please vote? The vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. Item 6B is approving and authorizing the city manager to execute an intergovernmental agreement between the Regional Public Transportation Authority and the city manager for fiscal year 07-08, and this time it is for fixed route transit services. I have a motion by Councilmember Summers, seconded by Councilmember Walters for approval. Any discussion? Would you please vote? The vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. Next item is on page 8. This is 8A. Oops, is it 7? You're right. 7, item number 6F. Thank you. This is modifying fees and charges for the Planning Division, Mesa Town Center Development Office, and Historic Preservation Office, as recommended by the Audit and Finance Committee. That vote was a 2-1, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. And this is also with concurrence from P&Z with a 4-0 recommendation. I have a motion for approval by Councilmember Walters, seconded by Councilmember Whalen. Any discussion on this item? Just please vote. Vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. Next item is on the same page, 7A, and this is amending the Mesa City Code regarding the following traffic modifications recommended by the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. That was a 3-0 vote, and this is some parking prohibitions on 2nd Avenue from Mesa Drive to Pomeroy, north of Broadway Road and west of Mesa Drive, District 4. And on the east side of Pomeroy from Broadway Road to a point 198 feet north of Broadway Road, on the west side of Pomeroy from Broadway Road to a point 210 feet north of Broadway Road. This is on the what would be referred to as the Third Avenue alignment, and north of Broadway Road and west of Mesa Drive. It's in District 4. This had to do with, again, posting. I believe this is the no parking and full-time no parking. I think this is in some of the same areas that we were having the issue with the day laborers. So I pull that item. I'll entertain a motion. Somebody wants to try. I have a motion by Councilmember Jones, seconded by Vice Mayor Walters for approval. I think we need to address immigration and some issues. I just don't think this is the right approach to do it. There is a note that the governor did sign the immigration bill today targeting employers. I hope the with the failure of the state Senate to address any immigration issues, I hope this council will readdress what we want to do comprehensively in the city of Mesa. But I don't think that this is going to accomplish much, so I'm going to be voting against it. All right. Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you, Mayor. This is like a balloon, and you're going to squeeze part of it, and the other part of the balloon is going to push out, and we're going to have another problem somewhere else. And in fact, according to the staff report, there's no real problems on Second Avenue yet. We're trying to be anticipating that when they're moved off of Pomeroy, they're going to go to Second Avenue, and so we're going to put no parking at Second Avenue. As a community, not necessarily as a city government, and probably not as a city government, but as a community, we have to get off our duffs and solve the day labor problem in this community. We need to do it yesterday. This is a Band-Aid that isn't going to work, but it at least is an opportunity to say again, you have to do something, folks. You have to be willing to do something. Take race out of it. Take illegality out of it. You've got a safety issue. That's why we're doing this. This is now supposedly a safety issue. If it's a safety issue, it applies to all people all the time. Deal with it accordingly.
All right. Councilmember Griswold.
If you're coming down the street at a 45-mile-an-hour limit and you turn around a corner, you don't expect a car to be stopped 5 feet in front of you and have no time to react. You do not expect people to be standing in the middle of the street so you couldn't go around that car. I think coming off a major street and where you know people are going to be stopping traffic and stopping cars is something that's a safety issue. I don't care what color the driver of the car is or the people standing around. It is not a good idea, so I'll be in favor of this.
Any other comments? Would you please vote? The vote is 5 ayes and 2 nays, with Councilmember Rawls and myself voting nay. All right, that's page 7. Let's go to page 8. Item 8, and it is 8A. This is taking action on the following recommendation from the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. This is a request by David Willard for water service outside the city limits at 7711 East Plymouth. And that comes forward with a recommendation for approval for option 3 with conditions, and the vote was 3-0 from the subcommittee. And I have a request to speak from David Willard. Mr. Willard?
Thank you, council members, to allow me to speak. I apparently have been caught in between renewing of regulations and rules and whatnot. I initially came to the city of Mesa for a water meter, knowing that there's a charged water line and water meter boxes in front of the lot I wanted to buy. Didn't think there was a problem. I went back there with my building permit and building plans and whatnot and found out my bill is increased $60,000 to include 2 roads that I have to build now. I don't have a problem building roads. I have a problem with putting roads that are city standards in the middle of county standard roads or no roads at all. There's no roads around where I live. There's just dirt roads. There's occasional asphalt roads. I'd like to tie into those roads, which are county approved roads. So I have no problem with adhering to dirt, to dust permits or dust regulations. I have a problem with the large bill I was presented, though, because the problem is I didn't allow that in my construction loan. I was thinking I was going to have city water, which is about $3,800. to get a meter. When $60,000 arrives, well, that's a problem. I can't pay that out of pocket. So the problem is, you elected to give me a chance to forego those fees until I get my permanent financing, then take it out of my permanent financing. Well, I know one of the problems is one of the situations that you were saying that we can limit one of the roads to be paved and try to abandon one of the other roads. So I'd have to just do one road. Well, the problem with that is I'll probably ending up doing both roads anyway, because one of the roads we're trying to abandon is going to be subject to the landowner on that side okaying realigning his lots. And with the doorstep conversation I had with him recently, he's in no hurry to do anything. So I believe I'm still going to be assessed to do both roads, and I don't believe that's fair. Like I said, I have no problem building roads. I live four doors down where I'm building right now. I have an asphalt road in front of mine as I speak with concrete ribbing. Now, this is basically what the city has presented to me, except that the road would be built to City Mesa standards, which is a lot more expensive. So if the council would allow me to put a road in, I'll maintain it. And one of the things was is that the city said they would not put a road in because they could not maintain the road. Well, I'll maintain the road if I put it in. I guess that's about all I got to say.
Okay.
Is there any questions? Thank you.
Why don't you sit down in front in case something comes up, if you would, please. Thanks, David. All right. This came out of committee. I have option one in front of me. I don't know if I need to read that or not. I know that this is kind of in between two different steps that we're taking. So does city staff want to give the little briefing on how this would work and what their recommendation is, please?
Mayor, if I could just summarize. Staff's recommendation, as per the council report, is option four. We have reviewed the case, and the in-lieu payments would reflect a suburban ranch standard for, I believe it's Plymouth Street.
All right. My council report says option three. Is it actually option four?
Yeah. The report itself is option four, and that is the recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah. The adjacent street is not something the city would demand from Mr. Willard, not now or not in the future. If there was any possibility of needing that street to be improved, it would be recommended that the lot to the west would have to make those improvements. So the total of one-time impact fees, which would include utility service agreements and the in-lieu payment, would be $29,882 and not $60,000. And the other issue that was brought up, and Mr. Willard is right, between the time the Transportation Infrastructure Committee met and today, the council had changed its policy to allow for this type of annexation. So the recommendation is also for Mr. Willard to annex into the city. Because of a timetable that he requested through the Transportation Infrastructure Committee to be able to have water service sooner than it would take to annex the annexation process, that staff was in agreement to create a development agreement for the in-lieu payment and have his annexation accomplished through the regular process.
Okay, so the bill is an in-lieu payment of $29,000.
The in-lieu payment for the street specifically is $25,938.
$25,938.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anyone from the committee want to report here? Was this through one of our subcommittees? Is that Kyle?
It's been a moving target since we had that committee meeting, so there are some changes.
Okay.
Question, Jack. He's offered to build a road and maintain it himself. Part of the problem is the county won't maintain it out there.
Councilmember Jones, that's correct, and I'm not sure if he's suggesting he would build the road to city standards, which would, might be quite different than what he's willing to do. Currently, the county has indicated their position is that they do not want a road there, they do not want to maintain it. Our position is that we will continue to work with the county, and at some point in time, I am sure that we will be having that road paved, if for nothing else, for PM10 restrictions in the future. So for us to be able to cover the cost of that when it comes, and our philosophy is when, not if, we need to get in lieu payments from the homeowners that are gaining our water service.
Because if we require an in lieu, then any money he might use to improve the roadway and maintain it, we've tied up in the in lieu. So it's a matter of coming to an agreement of the standard of what road Mr. Willard would want to build as to what we would accept, basically.
I would say, for the most part, other than the idea that he would also have to, I suppose, agree to maintain it. But I'm not sure that he'd be willing to spend the money to build it to city specifications. If you look at some of the asphalt ways over there, some of it's slurry seal, most of it is not rip and curb, and it surely wouldn't meet city specifications.
Okay, I'm kind of grappling here with the, we did the annexation policy that we'd go ahead and annex parcels that weren't necessarily contiguous, would do the Glendale model, but the conditions that they would agree to bring those lots up to city standard at some point when it was deemed appropriate because there was enough of the neighbors or something. But now I'm hearing that it wouldn't be city standards, it would be something else. It's county, is that like for an interim, or what are you referring to there?
Well, I wouldn't recommend that. I would recommend that we not build the street. We take the in lieu. And I think as we move along, and if this is successful, we'll have enough in lieu payments to be able to sit down with the county, show them that we have funds that could help add to any county funds that they're willing to contribute to a point where we would be able to annex the road and make it a city road.
Right. And why wouldn't the property owner just wait us out, knowing that the PM10 is an issue and the county's going to have to pave unpaved roads and the city's going to have to, so why bother to come in with in lieu of money just to...
I think it's a water service issue, Mayor.
Okay. And then I guess what's the volume? How many lots do you need? And if we get an in lieu from half of them and then they pave it, then they're in there without having to contribute to the fund.
And Mayor, as we look at the total... issue today, there are many homes who have already received water and have not had to put in lieu payments in the past. And
complicates it even more.
As our chair from the TIC said, it is a moving target as we move forward.
Okay. Well, I think the council is trying to find a way to annex as many parcels out there and provide water service and make sure that they are not a burden on the rest of the citizens of Mesa by having them have to pay for their road and give them water service and the other, because that's why the impact fees and paying property, not property taxes, but some of the other costs that are entailed being a citizen of Mesa. I'm just having trouble grappling with how this is all going to work out. And is the in lieu a bonded amount? Is that a amount? How is it secured? How do you get the in lieu payment?
I believe it's a cash payment, and it goes into an in lieu account that we oversee in our finance department.
Okay, so we're assuming that who gets the interest on it as it accumulates?
I believe we do, and if nothing else, it would help to cover probably some of the inflationary costs over time.
Okay, all right. Mike?
Mr. Willard indicated, and I'm not going to speak for you, I'm just going to indicate what I heard, that you might be willing to enter into this agreement if we could delay this until he receives permanent financing. Is that something that we could work a contract out in the in-lieu payment to facilitate that?
And Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, I believe that's what we have done. I believe it's a February 1st, 2008.
Have we matched up on an agreement on the 25938? Because I heard 60,000, so it seems like we are having huge number differences to begin with. Is this new information tonight, or did Mr. Willard know that it was reduced? So go ahead.
No, he's aware it is reduced. Mayor, Council, we did work out an agreement, and it is payable upon February 1st. He has indicated to us that his construction loan ends on December 31st. So that allows him another month or so as he's converting his construction loan into his permanent finance to come up with his in-lieu payment. Do you want me to speak to the difference in the fees?
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty he has over 600 feet of frontage. Based on both street frontages, both 77th and Plymouth, that would come to about $60,000. Part of our agreement, or what the TIC approved, was only paying an in-lieu payment for Plymouth Road, leaving 77th out at this time. So that was the difference. That's a $30,000.
And how do you bring 77th back in later?
It may or may not. There are properties to the west of him that are currently running east and west. We have talked with that property owner. I know he's been talking to him. I know he's not in any hurry. But if he shifts his property lines, 77th, I have confirmed with both utilities and transportation, would go away. We would not even need that right away anymore. So that could be better for both property owners in the end. But until such time we know that for sure, it sort of lingers there. The only time that we would ever go and get that money again is if he should do a lot split and sell off part of his current acreage, then he would be subject to completing all street improvements around it, and 77th could come up again.
Okay, and how do you know that when the construction is built and he does his financing that we get a check? He doesn't get water unless we get the check? Is that
No, we wrote that into the utility service agreement.
All right.
That we worked with legal on.
Mayor and Council, we did draft an agreement that provides for various remedies in the event the city is not provided with the in-lieu payment, including termination of the water service and also just general contractual remedies.
As in lien on the property?
That could be one breach of contract lawsuit.
Okay. Tom? I'm sorry.
Mike. No, that answers my question.
Councilmember Rawls.
Jack, if this area were in the city, it's already annexed, and he came to us with a request for a building permit, what would he have to pay under the same conditions, i.e. we don't think we need 77th, we're only talking about Plymouth, what would his fees be?
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, yeah, he would have to make or pay full improvements, and depending on where it is, and I might add, because this is in the desert uplands, we've made it a bare bones suburban ranch street with no street lighting, no sidewalks, and typically if he was in a mature part of the city that has that, he would have to be paying those also.
But if this particular area was in the city already, he'd still have to pay the 25.9 for the street improvements and the is 3,100 to get to the, because the difference is there's other impact fees.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
So he's not being asked to pay anything more because he's outside the city now than he would if he was inside the city now.
No, sir.
Okay. So it seems to me that it's a fairly simple question for the applicant. You either want to pay this money and get city water, or you don't come into the city now and drill a well. I'm quite frankly am exhausted talking about these issues about every month. I'm tired of them. I think they're a waste of time. They're not policy. It's piecemeal, and that's not what we're supposed to be doing. But were here and the applicants made his application and we'll take care of it. But I think that's the choice, sir. I mean, if you were in the city, you'd have to pay this amount. If you're not in the city, you have to pay the same amount. So you either pay it or you don't come into the city and you don't get our water.
Okay, you want to make a motion?
To that effect.
All right. That would be for option number 4 on the council report. Is that to make sure we have it correct? All right. I have a motion with a second. Discussion on it. Councilmember Griswold.
Just a point of clarification. Then the actual total fees he would pay would be $29,889. Is that correct?
With the extra $3,000 for water.
With the water meter hookup. And he would then receive water immediately if there's a tap there. And the road wouldn't be done until after he got his permanent financing about a year down the road. Or the in lieu wouldn't be paid to the city to be done. And then it would be our responsibility for doing a minimal road and working with the county. This is all dirt roads in there.
Councilmember Griswold, we would have to continue to communicate and develop some scenario with the county in the long term to be able to address the whole PM10 issue up there with reference to dirt roads and asphalt.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Boyle.
And then there would be the cost of annexation, which is $500, something like that.
It's something like that. It's $250 or $500. I can't remember. There's a breakup line in there.
Okay. Vice Mayor Walters.
Thank you. And I just want to get on the record something we talked about last time, which is that this money that he's paying in lieu cannot be used for some other street project someplace in the city. It can only be used right here.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I guess I'm grappling with his financing and us delaying the in lieu payment until he qualifies for a loan to pay the money. It sounds like the city of Mesa is the bank. If somebody says I'm going to have 3 years to construct my home and then it'll take me 2 years to qualify, are we setting a precedent that then we wait until that period? All right, somebody want to try that? Councilmember Jones.
No, we actually put him in the middle of our transition of policy. And it's not a precedent in any way that
okay.
I can see.
Okay, so what will the policy be on the next one that walks in the door in a similar situation?
We have a policy in place now. We've changed the annexing requirements and so forth.
Annex and pay the fees?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, thank you. Any other questions or clarifications? All right, I have a motion by Councilmember Rowles, seconded by Vice Mayor Walters for approval. Would you please vote? The vote is unanimous in favor of the ayes. All right, next one is 8.1. This is taking action on an ordinance and resolution modifying the electric energy cost adjustment factor as recommended by the Audit and Finance Committee. This is recommended by 2-1 for approval. And Transportation and Infrastructure Committee has also voted on this one. All right, I have a couple of requests to speak. Go ahead and Corey Miller.
Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak. Big budgets, small budgets, city budgets, household budgets. Everyone's interested in the bottom line. And we have a program that's federally mandated, but the problem is how to cover the cost for that program. Should we have the City of Mesa electric utility consumers pay all of the cost, or should that cost be apportioned out? I am asking that you please do not charge the City of Mesa electric users with this cost for operating this federally mandated program. Why do I say this? Well, first of all, we're paying much higher rates than our Mesa neighbors who are on SRP. So we have higher utility costs anyway, not even talking about the ECAF. Secondly, and it's been historically and currently, we transfer funds from the Mesa electric utilities, the revenues that we get, to the general fund, which is then enjoyed by everybody in Mesa. I mean, historically, that's the way we have funded our budget and can't really change that now, so that's a consideration.
Well, if we're sharing the revenues earned by the utilities for the City of Mesa electric utility consumers, it seems to me we should be sharing some of the expenses. So how can we pay for this federally mandated program? I would say let's have a utility or a fee increase for something that all Mesa households use, whether it's wastewater, water, or trash, refuse collection, whatever you'd like to call it. That way you have more families sharing the cost, more households sharing the cost, and the amount of the cost per household probably would be greatly reduced because you have a much larger number sharing the cost. So historically, times have changed. This would probably have been a moot point many years ago when the electric district was started because everybody was on the City of Mesa Electric. And if they raised the rates for the Mesa City Electric or the fees or whatever you want to call it, everybody shared equally because we were all on the City of Mesa Electric. Such is not the case anymore. And then I'd also like you to consider that the neighborhood that the City of Mesa Electric covers is an older neighborhood. Many of the people are older senior citizens on fixed incomes. So I am asking you to support me in this issue to have all Mesa households cover the cost of this federally mandated program. Thank you.
Okay. Bob Parker.
My name is Bob Parker. I live at 123 North Robeson, number 212. I'm here on behalf of the Mesa Grande Community Alliance. So we met in a steering committee recently and discussed this, and then we had our general meeting on last Tuesday when Vice Mayor Walters and Councilman Jones came and talked to us about this issue. I believe what she said is correct and true, and I don't need to add too much to that other than I want to remind you of how things have happened in the past in our area. It's called equal structures for equal money. Westwood, if you gave Westwood High School $100,000, since it's an older high school, they would have to put new doors on and those kind of things. However, if you gave that same money to a brand new high school out in East Mesa, they would be able to fund a new laboratory or whatever. So what I'm saying is that we've been for a long time getting into the shorts here in West Mesa, and we would like you to figure out a way to share the cost of this particular program and also to begin to look at how we can bring our utility budgets in line with the rest of the citizens of Mesa. Councilmember Jones said that there's a possibility we could add a few cents to one of the other parts of our bill from the city and share it among everybody in the city. And I think that's a good way to go. I know that you were, from what I heard, you were split 3-3 in the last meeting, and I would hope that you would consider that it's time to make some changes. This is a good time. And I thank you very much.
Okay. And we have one more speaker, Heather Scandalberry.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Heather Scandalberry. I live right here in the downtown Mesa in the Evergreen Historic District. I just wanted to speak to you and say that obviously I oppose this increase for the electric utility customers. And I oppose any increase for the electric utility customers. If any additional were to come up, what we understand is I've got information that we're paying anywhere from 8% to 13% more for our electric utilities. We have been for the last 4 years or so. We're not in line with SRP rates. And for on something like this, you know, the city's revenues come from sales taxes, where people, for the most part, have a choice of what money they spend when they're, you know, paying their share of the sales tax. But we don't have a choice. We have to pay the City of Mesa Electric Utility whatever the rates are. That's what our option is for a system that is pretty below par. It's I have 7 poles on my 1 acre property, 2 of which are hazardous poles and were marked as such by a survey that the city had done about 2 years ago, and the poles are still sitting there. So for an electric utility that's not receiving any maintenance or any upgrades, and those customers are paying up to 13% more than what other customers in the city are paying, it really feels like we're being squeezed to make up for the city's budget deficit. And no other way to say it, but that's just not fair. You know, it's really not fair. And to be considering, I'm disappointed in the how it's been allowed that we've, you know, these increases have been made so that we are at an inequitable amount with our other local utility providers, city staff, and whoever's created that. But I just hope that you'll consider that and hopefully maybe even do something to lower our utility rates and bring them back in line with other local providers. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Are there any other requests to speak on this item? Anybody else want to address the council? Okay. I'll go ahead and close the public comment period then and open it up for council discussion. I have a question from staff, if I could. The 13% was talked about. Is anybody done analysis on a residential customer and what our differential might be? Is that substantiated?
You know, Mayor, I think we need to be careful. I think we give numbers out and then it changes, and then we get held accountable for numbers we give today, and those numbers could be different tomorrow. But I don't know, Dave or Frank, you want to give a gander at where we are today? And I just want to be very careful. This is just a very preliminary estimate, because I hear complaints that we say it's something and then the next day it's something else. So, right. Frank,
and I think SRP is actually looking at a rate increase almost as we speak here. I think it's on their table now. So,
Frank McRae with the Resources Division, the Utilities Department. The last analysis we did this past spring for the average residential customer of our system was a 10% difference. As City Manager Chris Brady said, we have to be careful about quoting percentages, because based upon, it's very dependent upon the actual consumption patterns, how much a customer will consume in the winter versus the summer and so forth, because we have seasonally differentiated rates with SRP. SRP raises their rates or adjusts their rates as much as twice a year, and we have an electric energy cost adjustment factor that can change as frequently as monthly. So it's very careful, got to be very careful as to how you calculate that difference. The current estimate that we have is about 10% difference. That can fluctuate based upon a customer's consumption pattern versus in the winter versus summer periods of time.
All right. What's behind the mandate from the federal government? And I know that we had talked on budgeting of keeping the electric increase at zero. Now we're talking about the federal portion being included in the rates. And information I have is like 60 cents per customer. Was that mentioned and I just wasn't paying attention before? Or does zero not mean zero? It means zero with the exception of the federal increase.
We presented the electric integrated resource plan to the council in the December-January timeframe, and included in the plan, which is to be compliant with the federal requirements as a part of receiving federal hydropower resources. We put in the plan the indication that we were going to come to the council for recovery of implementing the demand side management portion of the plan through the electric energy cost adjustment factor. And there was a budget table included in the plan as well as in the city council report that laid out the first 12 months worth of implementation cost was about $200,000.
So I missed it. Okay. I'm admitting I missed it.
You can't win on that answer.
Yeah. I'll take Councilman Rawls's cue on
it. Okay. Well, I missed that one. I thought that it was zero, so I was a little surprised when this came up, that because I thought we were trying to get back in line with SRP.
And Mayor, the reality of this program, I think we have to be very careful, because we've been throwing out a generic term, federal mandate. Well, the mandate is actually specifically related to the electric utility users, and it is actually a program of conservation. It is a opportunity for providing, and I think Frank can go more detail, rebates and incentives to incorporate conservation measures. It's also to hire staff and do marketing to encourage conservation, really in the hopes of actually lowering the consumption of power within the electric utility. And I don't know, Frank, you maybe want to elaborate a little bit more on that.
That's exactly correct. And the demand-side management portion of the plan was designed to reduce our on-peak summer requirements so that all of the costs and investment in these programs would be returned in terms of savings, in terms of the resources that we go out and acquire on what's called the supply-side plan. So over the course of the 10 years, we will have twice as much of savings as we would in cost of these programs. And for the consumer, what that might mean is a compact fluorescent bulb. If we have a program that will incent a customer to obtain a compact fluorescent bulb, their savings over the course of a year will be a little over $7 in a year. So that would be just about enough to offset the increase that they would see as a result of recovering an additional $200,000 through the electric energy cost adjustment factor mechanism. And that's one of the programs that we're rolling out in the near future under the Chill Your Bill. Right now, Chill Your Bill consists of an incentive program for replacing older, less efficient air conditioners with more efficient air conditioners or heat pumps. And those are, again, all cost justified based upon the planning analysis that we've performed.
As long as you can afford to replace your vap cooler or refrigerator with a higher capacity unit, I'm sure you've done the analysis out 10 years, but do you have the upfront capital to do it is the big question for most people.
Well, the incentive is targeted at not so much convincing someone to replace their air conditioner before it's needed, but when they decide to replace their air conditioner or have to replace their air conditioner, how much does it cost them to go from what's called a seasonal energy efficiency rating of 13, which is the federal minimum standard, to a efficiency rating of 15. The way the current incentive program is laid out is, on average, we're underwriting about 65% of that additional cost. We're hoping that we don't have to raise that incentive, but with the budget and with the amount of participation that we're seeing, we may have to raise that incentive to get more participation. But again, we can still do that and still maintain the cost-benefit ratio.
Time value of money, doing it up front, doing it when it occurs. I've just system-wide, I guess I comprehend what you're saying. I just individual units sometimes don't cooperate with somebody else's cycle on replacement.
Well, again, it's the incentive that we're targeting is so that when they are required to replace an air conditioner, it'll cost $3,000 for the basic air conditioner. It'll cost another $500 to get to an additional energy efficiency rating of 2. And so we'll underwrite 65% of that additional $500 with the air conditioning rebate program.
Still costs $3,200.
Right.
And the $200 is going to be recovered at, what, 60 cents per month?
No, that's a different program.
It's a different number.
That's a totally different number. They'll recover that additional $200 of investment over time.
How long?
I don't have that number right in my head. I believe on the participant benefit cost test on this one, it was greatly over a 1 on a net present value basis, and we looked at that over 10 years.
Okay, and I apologize for asking all the questions, but it appears as if I'm the swing vote, so I'm trying to figure this out and make sure I understand it. All right, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me make it really clear that I am not opposed to the program. My position is that I support the program. I think it's wonderful for us to do the Chill Your Bill, do all these things. What I am trying to do is incrementally get the City of Mesa's electric utility customers aligned, substantially aligned with the SRP customers. As Heather pointed out, it isn't like they have the choice of walking across the street and getting their electric service someplace else. We are making a transfer from the electric utility into the general fund, and these folks, let's just say that they're paying 10% more. They're not getting 10% more police service, 10% more code compliance service, 10% more something like that. So, Frank, if you want to sit down for a second while I give this speech, because I'm not trying to give it to you. My point here is that this offers us an opportunity to get this alignment to move ahead in terms of getting the alignment. And my suggestion is that in this year, that the funds for that be taken from contingency, and in the future years, that what we do is, if, in order to address what that does to the budget, and as Mr. Brady pointed out correctly, over time, this has the impact of about, I think, $1.5 million, on the budget.
Over 5 years.
Oh.
That's what I meant.
It was $1.6 million over 5 years. Thank you. Okay. Couldn't understand that. You know,
sorry.
I'm not going to take up baseball coaching anytime soon. So over that period of time, if you look at this, in terms of the entire city of Mesa instead of just this small 7 square miles of Mesa that has the electric utility, you could actually put that same, you could recover that same amount of money by adding that to either the water, the wastewater, the solid waste, something like that. Because we have been handed a methodology for financing our cities that none of us sitting up here invented. I doubt that any of us sitting up here would have invented it. But we have been handed this methodology that puts a substantial burden on the utilities for financing the city. I'm just saying that I don't think it's equitable for the 7 square mile folks to be picking up an additional burden. If we were substantially the same as SRP, frankly, I wouldn't care if we transferred $1 billion out of the city of Mesa Electric Utility into operating the general operations of the city, and I don't think they would either. It's the inequity in it that's causing problems. And so that's why, Mayor, I'm going to make a motion that we not approve this. Thank you.
Okay. There's a motion and second to that effect. Councilmember Ross.
Thank you, Mayor. I just heard something a little different today than what I heard last week, and I appreciate the expansion of the discussion, because as it occurs to me, what we're doing here is we're trying to, a federal program wants us to conserve energy, conserve power. So I'm assuming that that is something that has a benefit to the nation as a whole, to Arizona as a whole, to Mesa as a whole, because we're going to be conserving power. Well, if it's a benefit to the community as a whole, then in my view, it ought to be paid for by the community as a whole. My reasons for voting no with Claudia last time were different. They were the inequitable argument. They were my aversion to raising these rate increases so long as there's money being transferred to cover things that I don't think should be in the budget. But I just heard a third reason why I'm going to vote no, which is that we're now pursuing a public policy that has wide-ranging impacts, and I think that public policy ought to be paid for by the community at large, which benefits from it at large. So there's another reason that I hadn't thought of before, and hopefully it'll help you, Mayor.
Vote yes on this one.
I did vote, but there was 3 motions last time, and voted
twice yes, 2 no, whatever.
Okay, well, the motion is for denial, is that correct?
Correct.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. You want to, that's correct. If you vote yes, it will be denied, and there would not be a energy cost adjustment factor placed on the bills for the customers in the 7 square miles.
And then, Mayor, I'll just be clear. I heard the word contingency. I'm assuming what we will be doing is reducing the fund balance in the utility fund. Or are we reducing the general fund transfer, which it seems to be the topic, and reducing the general fund balance?
I think you want the general fund transfer to, well, one thing we want to do is rebuild the infrastructure in the electric department. So we don't want to take it out of the electric department's fund balances. So it's really a general fund transfer that's coming out of there to keep the electric department whole so they can do what they've been planning on doing for rebuilding their system, is my understanding.
There won't be any more funds for the electric utility as a result of this, unless the council wants to go back and revisit the budget. What it means is we'll be reducing. In theory, there's a utility fund balance that accumulates all the fund balances from water, wastewater, gas, and electric. It's either that gets reduced or the transfer to the general fund gets reduced, therefore reducing the general fund balance by whatever amount is would have been generated.
I guess the fund balances are sufficient in electric for bonding purposes. It doesn't make too much difference which fund it comes out of, to me.
Right. Technically, they only care. Technically, the city today only carries a fund balance, the utility fund.
Okay.
So that's the pledge on the bonds is the utility fund, not necessarily in any particular activity.
So the utility fund is where it would come from?
Correct.
That concurrence? Okay. Other discussion on this? We have a motion and second for denial. So if you vote yes, it will in fact be denied. So Councilmember Griswold, and we'll vote.
You know, at first I looked at this as an opportunity for people to lower their their energy bills. I'm replacing an 18-year-old air conditioner this past week, and SRP pays me $70 a ton for putting a 14 or 15 SEER in there, which also cuts my bills every month. So it's a pretty good deal all around. I was looking for parity. How do we get parity and give people downtown the same opportunities that SRP gives their customers? They give them solar credits. They give them, if you change out old air conditioners, you change out light bulbs, et cetera. So I look at this program. It's giving the same thing that an SRP customer would have and ways to reduce your bill if you're on a fixed income for not a lot of money. When an air conditioner blows, you're going to have to come up with the money to fix it or be a very hot summer. The difference is the small amount in between. I agree. We have the strangest way to finance our city based on a 7-square-mile electric company. In 1945, we decided to finance our whole city on it. I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. As I said, it's so popular, not one of the city uses it, but that's what we're with. We've looked at the electric company, possibly the sale of it. The only reason that other companies are interested in it is because we have very trained employees. And the trained employees are in the short supply. So I think our employees, if anything did happen, would probably even make more money than they do now. But we wait to see on that one. So I don't think anybody's in jeopardy on this. We're just looking today what's the best way. So I'm going to probably change my vote where I was headed and say take it out of the utility fund and be in favor of the denial.
Okay. I'm going to be voting yes on this. I think the only thing I regret is that we didn't have this discussion a little bit in advance of setting our budget, because we probably needed to hit water or some of the other utilities a little bit to make up the difference, because I like the way our budget was stretched with our building up our reserve funds for our bonding. So that's the one hesitancy that I have, is it throws us off a little bit by $200,000 on what I had anticipated as being our fund balance to get those built up where I wanted them to. But I also thought that we were going with a zero increase for you electric and missed this $200,000. Just apologize for not seeing it and making some adjustments earlier. Any other discussion then? The vote is for a yes vote on this. Oops. Councilmember Whalen.
I think I'm voting no on this. You're nuts. I'd just like to congratulate Heather for coming forward tonight, Ms. Scannelberry. I know her and her husband, and you presented yourself incredibly well this evening. Some of your emails in the past have not been as polite as you were this evening. So I thank you for coming forward to show the real Heather, and I'll be supporting the motion.
Okay. All right. Again, a yes vote is for denial of this. Would you please vote? It is unanimous with everyone voting yes on this, so it will not be implemented. All right. Next item is item number 10, items from citizens present. The request to speak this evening?
Yes, Mayor, we have three speakers. The first one is Frank Alger.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. My name is Frank Alger. I live at 1009 North April in Mesa. Just want to come up and do a couple things. First, I want to give you a report on the Mesa Veterans Day Parade. Again, we had a very successful poker tournament that was sponsored by the Fort McDowell Casino that went off very well. We have another one coming up in October, and on the 5th of August, we are going to have the American Legion, post number 26, is going to host a luncheon. So if anybody wants to come out and lunch and support the parade, we'd really appreciate that. The other thing I want to do tonight is there was an article in the newspaper that was left on my doorstep this morning that I do want to address. There's been some misconceptions. Myself and Councilmember Rawls have a disagreement. It's been an ongoing disagreement, and that is correct that the newspaper said. But my disagreement with Councilmember Rawls is not actually the saying of the pledge. It's actually the respect that he shows for the national ensign. That is my issue with Councilmember Rawls. I would, and something the article said, and it kind of My perception on it was that I should be beating him up more personally, and I do want to just let everybody know I would never come and disrespect any one of my council members or my mayor, no matter how much I disagree with them, because there's a backbone here for the city. Whether I agree with what they're doing or not, I will come and tell you you're wrong. But I would never disrespect anybody or badmouth them, because you guys are getting paid $18,000 a year to spend about 50 hours a month getting beat up by people like me, getting lounge chair quarterbacks trying to second guess what you guys are doing without having all the facts. I just want to make that known that even though I do disagree with Mr. Rawls' stand, and I do think he's wrong, I do think he should stand for the flag. The 4th of July is coming up, and it gets me very I feel very strongly about that, but I do want to let you know, and let the citizens know, and let the reporters know, that to come up here and to try and get inside his head and figure out, you know, where he's coming from and telling him that he's, you know, he's a bad person or you know, something like that. That's I mean, we do live in America, and we do have the right to for him to do what he's doing. Again, even though I do think he's wrong, and I know I'm over, I'm just going to be a couple more seconds. You know, and it's a matter of respect for the symbol of our nation that I fought for. My friends have been injured. I've had some friends die for that symbol, and what that flag stands for. And when people disrespect it, it just kind of makes me angry. Again, I would never come up.
Frank, I need you to.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Okay. Next speaker, please.
Margaret, is it DeSante?
It says on my DD-214, I'm an officer and a lady. I do disagree also. That flag, I was in the United States Army 23 years as a nurse and served the heroes that you disrespect. That flag flies atop the world's tallest buildings. It stands watching America's Hall of Justice. It flies majestically over institutions of learning. It stands for peace, honor, truth, and justice. It stands for freedom. When it's flown with the fellow banners, the other banners are little, this one is higher, and it's the colors are truer. It bows to no one. It is recognized all over the world. It has fought in every battle of every war for more than 200 years. It was flown at Valley Forge, Gettysburg, Shiloh, Appomattox. It was there in San Juan Hill, the trenches of France, and in the Argonne Forest, Anzio, Rome, and the beaches of Normandy. It is presently in the mountains of Afghanistan and the hot, dusty deserts of Iraq. It led the troops, battle-worn and tired. It has been burned, torn, and trampled, and yes, disrespected, as Councilman Rawls does it. It has been soiled upon and burned. But when it's flown at half-mast to honor any soldier, and when it lies in trembling arms of a grieving parent at the grave of their falling son or daughter, it is proud. And for one person that has the unmitigated nerve to not stand for the flag of the United States, which he swears to uphold, is disgraceful. Thank you.
Last speaker is Diane Woods.
I'd like to make one minor disagreement with this man here. I think some of you guys work 50 hours a week, not 50 hours a month on this. Also, I would like to make a suggestion you put the clock on that side. That would be nice. But what I wanted to talk about, and this is just to bring up an idea, Mesa has started the crime-free program, I think, here in the Valley on rentals, and I would like to see it put before voters without me having to go around doing petitions, to have the citizens vote on having the whole city to be crime-free on all rentals. And I think that could happen. I don't know how it could happen exactly, but I would like to vote on that. I don't think that just because someone is poor and can't afford something that they should have to be subject to living near a bunch of criminals. And that's usually the case that happens. Not everyone that's poor is a criminal. And there's so many flop houses here in Mesa, and I know there are other places in the country too. But isn't that what Peoria is for? Is for the criminals to go live over there where I don't know anyone. At least I don't think I have any friends over in Peoria. But I really would like to see on a ballot to have it voted on that all rentals here in the city of Mesa become crime-free. Is that a possibility?
We're listening to your comments, so please continue.
Well, anyway, if there are any lawyers listening and there's any way to go about doing it, and would it be possible if we came up with an initiative for the council to put that on a ballot? I'm sure it's too late for the next election. I mean, for this coming up election, but maybe not the next one. Is that possible? Okay. Anyway, I'm done.
All right. So. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Tom.
Just very briefly, again, do you want to explain why I get to talk?
No, you. Anytime a council member is called out, they have the right to respond in kind.
Right. Frank, I just wanted to say two things. Number one, if you'd be like me and not read the newspapers, you wouldn't know that people wrote things like that. And I don't even know what you're talking about, but I appreciate you coming up here and saying what you said, because it isn't personal between us. I think we disagree, but it isn't personal. And secondly, I just want to say that you're an ex-Marine, and if you ever did want to beat me up personally, I just want you to know that I'm going to adopt the Monty Python view of battle and run away. So.
Okay. We have no other items, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
A motion and second to adjourn. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Council is adjourned.